Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Red Sox here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Girl at the Game. And I am joined by my friend, Boston Herald super writer, Jason Mastrodonato, for the final podcast before Pitchers and Catchers Report. I am much more excited about that than Jason is. But hi, buddy.
I'm excited. I mean, listen, we've been writing and talking about nothing for 4.5 months now. So
doesn't it seem longer?
It seems like it's been years, because last season didn't even really feel like a season. So it sucks that, you know, I'm usually in Fort Myers this time of year. It sucks that I'm not there. It feels weird. But, you know, keeping it safe. We'll watch them from home and hopefully be in the ballpark in April.
Yeah, I can't wait, right? Okay, so two things we have to talk about today. Fitting that this happens right before Pitchers and Catchers Report. We have to talk about the Red Sox officially signing Hirokazu Sawamura, whose name I definitely just butchered.
You nailed it.
Did I really?
I don't know.
You think?
It sounded like you nailed it. It sounded very smooth.
They signed him to a 2-year deal with a dual option for 2023. He's a righty, and in exchange, they DFA'd Jeffrey Springs, who's a lefty, who had some very unmemorable appearances for the Sox and then some straight up bad appearances for the Sox. So not really a loss, but best of luck to him. Do you have any thoughts on the signing that was announced today of Sawamura?
You know, I mean, 32-year-old from Japan, you never really know when they're that old. Sometimes they come over and they're still great. I mean, Koji Ohara had a tremendous career. I believe he came over here later in his career. It happens all the time. You know, a guy who was a starter early in his career has been a reliever, a closer for the latter half of his career. I think that closing experience matters, especially when you got a bullpen where you don't really have any. I mean, I guess Adam Ottavino maybe has a little bit. You know, Matt Barnes, you and I have talked about a lot, like, great reliever, maybe not a closer. So now if he does end up being a good pitcher and is and can handle big league hitters well, at least you have a guy who's got late inning experience. And I think that matters. I think that we've gotten into the era of just be a good reliever and you could be a closer. And it's like, no, that's obviously not the way it works.
Really not how it works for the Red Sox.
Yeah. It's good that they have someone with that experience, and it's a low budget contract. I think it's $3 million. So it's like, you know, small risk, take a shot on a guy who was dominant for Tanaka's old team, the Giants, for most of his time in Japan. And, you know, seems like a nice little low budget opportunity for them.
Yeah. I mean, according to Baseball Reference, he's got a career 2.82 ERA in 10 seasons. I have not done the deep dive into his stats, but honestly, a 2.82 ERA from anybody just sounds so great. Like any ERA under 4 right now, my standards are so low. But you know what is interesting is that a lot of people have been kind of saying, and I don't even know, maybe you were one of the people who said this to me, that this offseason kind of mirrors the offseason between 2012 and 2013, just because there were so many low budget, very random, I guess, signings. What are your thoughts on that comparison?
Yeah, no, I wrote it like last week too. I think it makes a lot of sense to me. I think if you're kind of caught in a position building this roster where you're not really going for it, but you're not really rebuilding, they didn't have a ton of money to spend if they want to stay under the CBT, which is like, they don't have to. They were under last year, so they don't really need to stay under the CBT. But is there anyone out there that they were going to get that made it worth it to go over? Probably not. They weren't going to be in on Trevor Bauer. They could have gone after George Springer, but didn't. So it was like they weren't going to go over the CBT. So they were pretty much guaranteed to have only low budget signings. And at least they put some effort in. You know, like I didn't think they were going to put any effort in. I thought they were just going to mail it in like they did last season and be like, hey, guys, you know, maybe Bogaerts and Devers will be MVPs and we could win 84 games and like the AL will somehow suck and we'll sneak in. But at least they added some pieces. The thing I think is kind of an underrated aspect of what they've done so far is they've got Alex Cora's guys. You know, he loved Kike Hernandez, who he put on the Team Puerto Rico World Baseball Classic team in 2017, which was a great team, by the way, that Cora was the GM of that squad. They had the most all-world players in the tournament and made it to the finals and lost to the United States. So Hernandez has experience with Cora, and Cora has experience building a roster, and it kind of looks like Cora built this roster. He gets Kike Hernandez, he gets Marwin Gonzalez, who was Cora's like favorite player on the 2017 Astros. He called him the MVP of that team. He hit 300, he hit 23 homers, he played five positions. He was awesome. He has not been awesome since then, but now he's reunited with Cora. So they have versatility now, which they didn't really have before. They can move guys around, and Cora loves that. So it's a lot like that 2013 team where there's no long-term contracts. All these guys are on 1 or 2 year two-year deals. If they stink this year, they trade them in July. They have 1 or 2 guys come back next year. They can trade them later. It's a low-risk roster right now. It costs a lot of money. It's close to a $200 million team, but there's not any long-term commitments that they've added. If they stink, they blow it up again. It doesn't really matter. And they got kind of a sneaky decent chance of being okay.
So, okay, this is interesting. You asked me literally this afternoon why my expectations were so low for this team, but it sounds like your expectations are low.
They're low, but so, you know, and you could read this in Thursday's Boston Herald or Wednesday's sneak preview of what you could read. My idea of what would a successful season for the 2021 Red Sox be? I think they don't have to make the playoffs for this to be a successful year. I think they just need to be competitive from start to finish. Like, they can't afford to have another season like last year where they're just not competitive, where there's no reason to watch, where people are turning the games off in the fourth inning because it's the same story every day. They don't have the pitching. Doesn't really matter. The offense is like tired of trying to score 9 runs to make up for it. And it was painful. Nobody wanted to watch. The ratings took a huge hit. It was a disaster. And that's what they can't afford to do. Because I think if they have another sleepy season like that, they're going to lose a lot of fans. I get emails from readers all the time that say they're Dodgers fans now. They're like, oh, I love Mookie Betts. I'm wearing my Dodgers hat in Boston. And I've seen it. The Red Sox need to be concerned that they're kind of falling out of relevance in this city. And if they had another bad year like that, it's just going to kill them. So they don't need to make the playoffs. They just need to be competitive. They need to give people a reason to watch them.
Okay, so it's funny because I literally said to you this afternoon, my goal was for them to be a 500 team. Mm-hmm. That was my goal. Because like you said, they need to be at least somewhat competitive. And a 500 team is at least mildly competitive, you would say. I mean, at a certain point in the season, if they're not going to be a wild card team or obviously the division champ team, then it's a different story, because by late August or early September, you already know how it's going to go. But my whole thing isn't so much that, you know, I think that they're going to be a postseason team. I don't even think this is their year. I think maybe 2022, we can have some higher expectations for them. This is kind of like their get back on track year. You know, this is the year where we find out if Chris Sale is good again, if Eduardo Rodriguez can pitch again, if Xander and Devers can have bounce back years. Is JD Martinez actually old, or was last year just a byproduct of the fact that he wasn't able to use the same video technology that he's gotten used to using that helps him adjust his swing after every at bat? Like, there are so many things that last year threw out of whack, and the year before, quite frankly, threw out of whack for this team. But the biggest thing, like you said, for fans is, will this team be watchable in 2021? Because quite frankly, like, I had to watch those games for work. And by the fourth or fifth inning, like, I had them on one screen and then I had TV on another screen, because it was physically painful to sit through the same thing every single night. Once every 10 games, they would have like one game where they would score 20 runs and they would absolutely blow some random team out of the water. But other than that, it was the same thing every single night. You know, they might even put up 6 runs in the beginning of the game. But guess what? 2 innings later, whoever their starting pitcher was that night gave up 10 runs. So it didn't matter. I don't blame fans for not wanting to watch that. And it doesn't mean that, like, you don't love the Boston Red Sox, like, in their totality. Yes, there are some people who every single day now they reply to the Red Sox Twitter account being like, I'm no longer a fan of you. You're a poverty franchise. Like, grow up. You got 4 championships in the last 15 years and the Indians haven't won one since 1948. But like, yes, please cry about poverty. Yeah, they sucked the last 2 years. It's annoying. But guess what? Perspective.
Yeah. I mean, they're spending almost $200 million on this team. So it's not like they're a poverty franchise. They just are doing it a little differently. And when you see the Dodgers do what they do, where they're like YOLO and are just blowing through the luxury tax threshold, They're basically all in on this season. It can be frustrating when you're a Red Sox fan. You're like, why am I a fan of a big market team when it feels like I'm a fan of a small market team right now? They didn't make any signings over $10 million this winter. Are they going to even use any of their top prospects this year? Are they just going to keep them in the minors again to save money? That is frustrating. And when you see a team that's worth as much money as the Red Sox cutting corners to save $5 here and there, I totally understand why that's frustrating. I think the Alex Cora factor this year isn't necessarily, oh, is it going to be magical again? For me, it's more about how's he going to have them playing? Because he's talked a lot about, I want them to play with energy and to play faster. They looked really slow last year. And I would agree with that, but that wasn't the problem. I don't think they stunk because they were slow last year. They stunk because they couldn't pitch. And I think that's Cora's biggest issue is he was really good at that his first 2 years here, identifying guys in the bullpen, figuring out what their roles were. Oh, okay, this guy's got a great curveball. He needs to throw his curve more. This guy's got a terrible fastball. We need to find something else. He's really good at that, even though he's not a former pitcher. I think, you know, an argument can be made that he's had just as much of an impact on pitchers as he has position players. So that's to me where the Alex Cora difference needs to come in is identifying things in the pitching, in the bullpen, how he's going to use guys and pitchers that had bad years. They have so many guys we've never heard of in that bullpen still. That's the biggest factor to me.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting year for Cora because the first 2 years of his Red Sox tenure were so drastically different. The first year he came in, it's totally a stacked team. They get super lucky where they have almost zero injuries the entire season, which is almost unheard of. They win the World Series by a mile. And the second year, completely flip that. Your entire starting rotation, except for your youngest starter, is either injured or terrible. Almost all of your players have a down year, except for a couple of players who actually get better, like Devers and Bogarts. But you go from winning 108 games to winning, what, like 85 games or something? I think it'll be really interesting to see what he does now with a third version of a completely different constructed team where you do have a lot of guys who already know him, either from playing with him on the Red Sox his first time around or from like Marwin Gonzalez or Kike Hernandez. You have a guy like Martin Perez who came back because he wanted to play for Alex Cora. But you also have like a bunch of random signings that like, is Alex Cora going to be good with Sawamura, who they just signed today, who's like been in Japan his entire career? Before we talk about this FanGraphs rankings, which is so absolutely hilarious to me, got to plug our exclusive betting sponsor, BetOnline. They are the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football is over, which I'm clearly heartbroken about, but we have the NBA, college basketball, the NHL, and of course, pitchers and catchers report tomorrow. So baseball is right around the corner. They even cover awards, TV shows, and reality TV. So if you're somebody who doesn't care about sports at all, they still have something for you, but also, why are you listening to this podcast? They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. They have you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best place to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So go to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. As always, Locked On Red Sox is brought to you by Built Bar. They make the best tasting protein bars on the market. Each bar is soft, easy to chew, and coated in 100% chocolate. They have 18 amazing flavors, and each bar is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. So they are great if you are looking to lose or maintain weight. And for a limited time only, when you go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, you will get 20% off your next order. That promo code works if you are a first-time buyer or a repeat customer. So go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. MLB released FanGraphs projected postseason odds today. I can't swear on this podcast, but they are quite the bleep show because they have the Red Sox in third highest odds to make the postseason above the Tampa Bay Rays, and pour one out for the Orioles because they apparently have a 0.0% chance of making the postseason. I would think that they would at least have like a 0.00001%. Like, zero. How do they have literally zero? Like, I'm thinking of the Dumb and Dumber scene where he's like, so you're telling me there's a chance? Like,
zero.
How are you at zero?
Zero. Like, wait, the Red Sox are third in the American League?
In the East.
Oh. So what do they got? They got Yankees, Blue Jays, Red Sox?
So they put the Yankees at a 91.6% chance to make the postseason. The Blue Jays are in second at 53.6%. The Red Sox wow. are pretty close behind at 47%. And then wow. you go way down and the Tampa Bay Rays are 18.6% and the Orioles are zero. I mean, for starters, like I wouldn't have put the Rays that low. I also wouldn't yeah. have put the Rays beneath the Red Sox when they literally just went to six games of the World Series. Right. What are your thoughts on this?
The Rays revamped their team. I mean, they, you know, they traded Blake Snell. They
right.
they let Charlie Morton walk away from an option that they could have kept him at the same price he ended up signing for in Atlanta. They lost Hunter Renfro, who's now on the Red Sox. They don't have a lot of their players. The thing about the Rays is they know what they're working with so well, and their farm system is so stacked. They always have pitchers ready to go, always. And
must be nice, huh?
Yeah, they are the reverse Red Sox. You know, I wrote last week, I thought the Red Sox had a coin flip's chance at making the playoffs. So 46% doesn't seem crazy to me. I'm just surprised that they like them better than the Rays. The Rays,
you by a mile too. It's not even close. I mean, the Rays are 18.6% and the Red Sox are 47%.
That's crazy. I wonder if that's the same, like you were talking about betting during your ad. I wonder what if the bettors in Vegas also think the Red Sox are that much more likely to make the playoffs than the Rays, because I don't see it that way. I don't know what the FanGraphs projection model is using, but the Rays just have pitchers and the Red Sox don't. And that's the bottom line is Chris Sale's not going to be back till at least May, maybe later. We don't know how he'll look. You and I have talked extensively about the other question marks. Eduardo Rodriguez, can he pitch? You know, will he be able to stay healthy? Not physically, not with his arm, but with his myocarditis. You know, Valdi's always an injury risk. Garrett Richards, you don't even know where the innings are coming from. Are they going to have young guys coming up from AAA? Probably. How many starts are they going to get from guys who don't even begin the year on the roster? You know, right. it's going to be a revolving door in that starting rotation. And that's why, to me, it's hard to put them above the Rays. The Rays know what they're doing. They have a pitching plan. They have depth. They have talent from the pitching perspective. The Red Sox are more all in on a couple of guys staying healthy and bouncing back from injury. And that's where I think it's going to be really tough for them. But I still say a coin flip's chance. You know, there's a coin flip's chance Sale comes back and actually pitches really well. And that could be enough for them. If Sale's Sale and comes back in May or June, that could be enough for this team.
I just remember in 2017, Sale was obviously the ace of the roster and Farrell used him so much that he was exhausted by like August. And, you know, that was the beginning of kind of his back and forth in his career here. And ultimately, of course, Tommy John. But I totally agree. I think, you know, the starting rotation is interesting because there are so many question marks. People are acting like Erod coming back is 2019 Erod coming back, when it's like we've literally never seen someone come back from myocarditis to play baseball before. Mm-hmm. Tanner Houck, he was great in those three starts in the fall. They were three starts and teams have now had I think he's great. All I'm saying is teams now have had all winter to study those three starts plus all of his minor league footage, figure him out, and he, God forbid, might come back and get shelled. It is worth noting the three starts he made were all against postseason teams. It was the Marlins, the Braves, and the Yankees. But still, the way the teams,
right.
you don't know. And then you got Nick Pivetta, like no one knows what his deal is. Like, it's just not the same. And that's why I was so shocked. If you look at the rest of the American League, the Red Sox are like sixth highest percentage of making it. The Yankees, Twins, Astros all lead their divisions. And then you got the Blue Jays and the White Sox. And then it's the Red Sox.
And then the A's.
Yeah. And then the A's and, you know, it's all downhill from there. But,
yeah.
You know, you compare that to the National League where the NL West alone, 96.7% chance for the Dodgers, 92.9% chance for the Padres, and 81.2% for the Mets. So for me personally, I think the National League is going to be much more interesting to watch just because we have so many powerhouse teams in it. It kind of reminds me of 2018 when you had three American League teams win over 100 games.
Yeah. The Cardinals look great now. They got Arenado. Braves look really strong.
I think they're sleeping on the Cardinals, but I still think it's just, you know, at the end of the day, the team that's in the World Series for the National League is either the Padres or the Dodgers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Mets, don't discount them.
I'm not discounting them, but I just don't think that they're all the way there
yet. The Braves are really good.
again, I mean, these things are such a crapshoot. Like, I remember being on a media call with A-Rod, of all people, A-Rod and Jess Mendoza. It was an ESPN media call going into 2019. And they had just spent the day at Fort Myers talking to different Red Sox players and doing, you know, Red Sox stuff. And both A-Rod and Jess Mendoza said that they predicted the Red Sox winning the World Series again in 2019. And like, you look back on that now and it's like the funniest thing ever, because that team was garbage.
Yeah.
And like, such a disappointment from the year before. Like, talk about a come down. That's like, you know, you're dancing in the street and then someone walks up and just punches you in the face. Like, you never know. Yeah. You literally never know. It's one of the things that makes baseball so great and also such a headache. But, you know, the Red Sox, at the beginning of the offseason, I wrote that if Chaim Bloom did X, Y, and Z, I thought the Red Sox could be a wild card team. Not saying they could win the wild card, but that they could be a wild card team. And I still do think that they could be, you know, it could have that 2013, you know, magic to it.
Right. That's the
hope. A lot of things would have to go, they would have to get really lucky, because a lot of the things that they're banking on are not things that they can control. They can't control Chris Sale. They can't control Eduardo Rodriguez. Cora can hopefully figure out Devers, but that's different than like, you know, magically healing somebody's arm or their heart. Right. Like, so, you know, there's a lot of things that, even though pitchers and catchers report tomorrow, like, we're still waiting, you know, we're still playing this kind of waiting game for, honestly, like, at least the next 2 months, because we don't even know if Eddie is going to be ready to be on the roster on opening day.
Yeah. I asked Chaim Bloom last week if he thought this was a playoff team, and he said it can be. We have the top end talent, but he admitted like a lot of things need to go right. You know, like,
I could be a playoff team if a lot of things went right.
Exactly. But you know, it's a tough question to answer when you're the GM of a team that you admit is playing for the future. So, you know, there's not an answer there that was going to probably make anybody happy, but it stood out to me that he was not overly optimistic about this team. He was honest about it. You know, he said we can be, but a lot of things have to happen. And that's, I think that's how everyone kind of looks at this roster.
But here's the thing, right? Well, Fangraphs is just playing it fast and loose now, clearly. But here's my question before we wrap up. Chaim Bloom, though, are we surprised? Because Chaim Bloom is, like, at this point, the master of kind of obfuscation. Like, how many times have we heard him say he sees a lot of upside in somebody, or, you know, this team could do something? Like,
well, that's,
you know,
you're right.
I could be an Olympian if a lot of things went right. He's purposely, you know, exercising the vagueness that he has become known to, you know, do every single time he talks to the media. Like, you think he's being honest because he's not really taking a firm stance.
Right. Like, no, you're right to question his language, and I agree he hasn't really taken a firm stance on anything. But I think the way he talks matches with the way he builds his roster. He talks about all this upside. Well, look at the moves he makes. He only makes moves that have potential to have profit value in the future. Like, every single contract he signed has some kind of option for year two, or he signs players like Hunter Renfroe or Jose Peraza who are still arbitration eligible. So he signs them to 1 year deals. And then if they're good, he gets two or three more years out of them via arbitration. Everyone has an option for a second year. There's like, this is what he does. In the 2 years he's run this team, his entire strategy has been find players that have possibilities of future surplus value. It doesn't necessarily mean find proven players who are going to be great this year. It's find guys who have upside, not just for this year, but for next year. And that's been his plan. And so I agree that he doesn't really say much. And as a fan, that's got to be pretty frustrating. And as a reporter, sometimes it is too. But I think his words have so far matched his actions. I mean, this is who he is. He's building the roster the same way he talks about his roster.
The only thing I'll say is I saw some statistics on Twitter that kind of made me think of Chaim Bloom. And this is the last thing I'll say before we hop off, is Danny Vietti from CBS Sports tweeted Justin Turner's stats, because obviously Turner is staying with the Dodgers. He said, Justin Turner, aged 24 to 29, six seasons, 15 home runs, 132 RBI, ages 30 to 35, six seasons, 109 home runs, 363 RBI. And it just made me think of Bloom, because there is so much of an emphasis on club control nowadays, you know, arbitration eligible, you know, guys with options on their deals who you can just send up and down with reckless abandon and, you know, not pay versus a guy like Brock Holt or Mitch Moreland, you know, and teams are cutting those guys loose, or even Jackie Bradley Jr., who has, as of right now, yet to sign a deal with anybody because he's 31 years old, I believe. And even though he's literally a gold glove outfielder, doesn't have a team, which you can also partially point to the market, you know, during COVID, that teams don't want to spend big. In a normal year, I think JBJ would have already had a 4-year deal somewhere with an at least $15 million a year average annual value. But my point being that,
okay, fair, go ahead.
Give the man the respect he deserves. My point being, though, you know, Chaim Bloom is the kind of guy, you asked him why Jose Peraza over Brock Holt, and he gave you an upside answer, which is basically BS. Let's be real, because Peraza's not even on the roster. Like, he's gone. He is not part of this team. So, you know, that experiment lasted like 6 months over a guy who even this week was still living in Boston, bringing New Balance sneakers to the Jimmy Fund. And he hasn't been on the team since September 2019. You look at that kind of situation and you're like, okay, but how far does it go? You know, how much does club control matter? How much does the low cost option matter compared to a guy with identical stats who also has the experience? Because if you look at a guy like Justin Turner, who was an integral part in the last 6 years, or, you know, even the last 2 years of the Dodgers. So I was at a game in LA where he hit 3 home runs. If teams had just given up on him for, you know, a guy with similar stats, like even look at Christian Vasquez. Christian Vasquez before 2019 had hit a total of something like 10 home runs in his entire career. It was like 6 years, 10 home runs. He hit, what, 20 home runs in 2019? Sometimes you just give up on guys too easy. Because there's a cheaper option with similar stats.
Exactly.
The Twins gave up on David Ortiz.
Yeah. Well, like you always say, you always say prospects don't win World Series, and you're right. You know, they don't. The other thing I like about the Red Sox roster is they have winners. You know, Hernandez won the World Series last year. Marwin Gonzalez won the World Series in 2017. I think there's a lot of value in bringing guys like Justin Turner back, you know, guys who are proven winners that they know what it's like to be on those teams. I think that adds a lot of confidence in the clubhouse. That goes a long way in baseball, more than other sports. Well, certainly seems to work in football, as Tom Brady is proving. But for the most part, I think it tends to work in baseball more than other sports. So they have that going for them, too. They're not just all young side. I mean, you know, Hernandez and Gonzalez are older guys who've been around a little bit. So they're not all just young guys.
At this point, Xander Bogaerts is a veteran. I mean,
he's one of the veterans in the clubhouse.
2013 debut, man. I mean, we're coming up on his 9th season in Major League Baseball.
At least we got some baseball to watch soon. I mean, it's not going to be, we're not going to be able to watch them work out like I usually do, because I won't be down there. Most reporters aren't going to be, but hopefully we'll have a lot of the games broadcast on TV and we can see what's going on, and we'll have something new to talk about in the coming days. So that'll be exciting.
You know what? I go back and forth between like being like, I need baseball back immediately, and am I setting myself up for pain? But okay. So this has been your last Locked On Red Sox before pitchers and catchers report. And soon we will be back to 5 episodes a week. But in the meantime, you can follow Jason on Twitter at jmastrodonato, or you can read his writing in the Boston Herald. You can find me on Twitter at gfstaro1. You can follow Locked On Red Sox at @LO_Red Sox. Thanks so much for listening. Wear a mask, and as always, go Red Sox.